Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When young Juan Felipe Herrera went to third grade in San Diego, he did not speak a lot of English. He'd grown up moving up and down California with his Mexican immigrant farm worker parents, speaking mainly Spanish. At school, he says, his tongue felt like a rock in his mouth. That changed. This month, Juan Felipe Herrera was named next Poet Laureate of the United States, the nation's first Latino Poet Laureate. The whole nation's. This hour on Point, Juan Felipe Herrera, the nation's poet. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you need from a poet laureate these days, from this poet laureate, Juan Felipe Herrera? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Fresno, California, Juan Felipe Herrera, newly named United States Poet Laureate. He just finished serving as poet laureate for the state of California, author of more than a dozen collections of poetry, including Senegal Taxi, 187 Reasons Mexicanos Can't Cross the Border, and Half of the World in Light, which won the National Book Critics Circle Award in 2008. In 2009, he was awarded the Penn Open Book Award. In 2010, a Guggenheim Fellowship. His next poetry collection out this fall is Notes on the Assemblage. He's currently a visiting professor of ethnic studies at the University of Washington. Juan Felipe Herrera, soon to be Poet Laureate of the United States. Welcome to On Point. We are delighted to have you.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. I sure appreciate it. It's a great honor to be here.
People are really celebrating out there. Here's Felix Contreras, host of NPR's Alt Latino podcast. Wow, shout it from the rooftops. My pal, Juan Felipe Herrera, is named Poet Laureate of the United States. It's kind of a big deal, sir.
You know, it is a big deal, and definitely is a big deal for me. I'm really thankful to everyone who's given me so much support all the way through. And, of course, Dr. Billington of the Library of Congress and Rob Casper, all of California, and everybody here in the United States, thank you so much.
Did you see it coming? Do they send smoke signals in advance of an announcement like this? How's it work?
No, I did not see it coming, and I wish there were smoke signals. It was just a telephone call out of nowhere, it seemed. And that's when I talked to Rob Casper and Dr. Billington, and I was shattered into pieces of surprise and put myself back together again.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, congratulations to you. What do you hope, plan to do with this? So you've been a pretty active poet laureate in California. You had this giant project where you had a poem that people could contribute to all over. They could contribute, I think, on Facebook or any place to it. What do you hope to do as poet laureate of the whole country?
Well, you know, I really hope to get everyone involved, and I'm inviting everyone already to get pre-invited. I'm pre-inviting everyone to getting those poems in suitcases and back of gas bills and energy bills ready to go, because I am going to call on everyone to participate. I really want a lot of participation. That's what our poetry is all about.
Your big all-in poem you could contribute via Facebook or Twitter or email was called Most Incredible and Biggest Poem on Unity in the World. Did you get a good response to that, sir?
You know, I got a good response, Tom. It was really good. I had students responding. I had community members responding. I had danzantes, Aztec dancers here in California responding with kind of sacred chants, and people in the Southern California deserts responding, and up north in Napa, and really good. You know, I got around, close to 200 pages back-to-back of line-by-line poems.
That's fantastic.
A lot of lines. Yeah.
We have spoken with many poet laureates on this show, and I'm just looking at a list here with Rita Dove and Robert Pinsky, Billy Collins, Kay Ryan, Ted Kooser, Natasha Trethewey. So you come in very good company here. You've got some readings for us. I think you've got the very first one that might take us pretty far back, all the way back to the 1970s. There's a lot we want to learn about your history and your path and your view of the world, but let's, if we may, get some of your poetry in our listeners' ears right off the bat. You have this one called Let Us Gather in a Flourishing Way. It has a lot of Spanish woven into it. Could you introduce it and give us a read?
Sure thing, you know. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It's called Let Us Gather in a Flourishing Way. It's a poem that that kind of just came to me. The first line just came to me. I was in UCLA at that time, late 60s. Mm-hmm. And it was a time of, when we were all calling on our own cultural selves and reclaiming our lives in many ways and histories and herstories. And I felt really good, you know, and this was about honoring our home language and also where we wanted to see things to go, you know, going. In this case, a very kind of a round, inclusive world of songs and light and community. So that's how I felt writing this poem, and let us gather in a flourishing way. Let us gather in a flourishing way, with sun, loose grains, abriendo los cantos, opening the songs que cargamos cada día, that we carry every day in el young pasto, on the young leaves, our body, nuestro cuerpo, to give, para regalar y dar feliz, perlas, pearls of corn-flowing árboles de vida, pearls and open trees in the four corners, in las cuatro esquinas. Let us gather in a flourishing way, contentos, llenos de fuerza, full of happiness and strength to vida, to life, giving birth, nacimiento, to fragrant rios, to rivers and sweet, fresh, turquoise, green, strong flesh of our children, rainbows. Let us gather in a flourishing way, en la luz, en la carne, in the light, in the flesh of our heart, to toil tranquil in peace, tranquilos, in fields of blossoms, juntos to stretch los brazos, our arms, tranquil once again with the rain, en la mañana, in the morning, early star, daybreak on our forehead, temprana estrella, cielo de calor, sky of heat and warmth and wisdom to meet us where we toil siempre, always. In the garden of our struggle and joy, let us offer our hearts a saludar, to greet our eagle rising freedom, nuestra águila, to celebrate, a celebrar, woven, brazos, arms and embraces and branches and leaves and stones and sweet figs and feathers and piercing, bursting, avocados and aguacates and ripe mariposa fields and butterflies and seas and clarity and oceans of our face to breathe, all of us, on this road blessing, and el camino, seeds to give, to grow, maíz, maislam, the land of corn, and the hands of our love.
En las manos de nuestro amor.
Yes.
There from Juan Felipe Herrera. From the late 1960s, Let Us Gather in a Flourishing Way. It's beautiful to hear you read it still and to weave everything together. My goodness. How do Spanish and English play in your mind after all these years? You're no third grader any longer. Your tongue is clearly not a stone in your mouth. How do the two play in your mind, dear poet, sir?
Well, you know, it's they have become one, Tom. They have become one, you know. All our languages are really, in a sense, a collective music. And that's how Spanish and English feel now. They're no longer antagonists or separate, singers. They're kind of one singing heart inside of me. They're both very dear to me. And as an artist, you know, as a word artist, I bring them together even closer, see what happens to them. Maybe they can explode a little bit. I change the isotopes as much as I can.
Changing isotopes with the newly named next Poet Laureate of the United States, Juan Felipe Herrera, with us from Fresno, California. There is a lot we want to learn, and people who want to speak with you, Juan. Marti is calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Marti, you're on the air with Juan.
Thank you. I just am calling because I just happened to hear, I'm listening to the program. I am thrilled that you have been named Poet Laureate for this year. We have poet Ted Kooser from Nebraska, who was Poet Laureate in 2004 to 06.
Yeah.
And he was a huge influence on me, just really appreciating poetry. And I'm just simple. I just love to read poetry. And I'm thrilled for you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I don't have any profound wise questions to ask. I just want to know more about you, and I plan to read your, I haven't even read any of your works, but I will be doing that.
Marti, congratulations from Omaha are enough, and very, very welcome here. Yes, Ted Kooser we had on as well, and loved speaking with him. Now we have the first Latino poet laureate of the United States. You heard that right there in his first poem. What do you hope that aspect of your history, your family, your cultural heritage brings to the whole country, Juan Felipe Herrera?
Well, that's a big question. I've been doing this for quite a long time, mm-hmm. you know, since maybe 45 years ago or so. And I just hope to bring, you know, a positive embrace. That's really it. And whatever takes place in our exchange, you know, I really want to have a lot of dialogue and communication and participation with everyone. That's the heart of what I do and what I want to do and what my poetry is all about.
When you're all the way back in that third grade scenario, what was it? I read this wonderful thing from the Poetry Foundation. Your teacher, you were standing there. You could barely speak in English. I suppose you were just a little bit intimidated or frightened. She had you sing Three Blind Mice and complimented you. Miss Sampson, right. Back in the San Diego Barrio Logan. And somehow singing Three Blind Mice seems to have liberated your tongue.
You know, that's true, you know, and she's the one who encouraged me to liberate my tongue. She, African-American professor, teacher, mm-hmm. Mrs. Lucille Sampson in third grade at Lowell Elementary in Logan Heights, mm-hmm. The barrio that we lived in 1956 and a few more years after that. She was, you know, she had to sing spirituals and that was the Three Blind Mice. Kind of was my opening, you know. I stepped up to the class and I faced that audience, and by the end of the year I was singing solos and for the whole assembly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour with the newly named Poet Laureate of the United States, the first Latino Poet Laureate of the U.S., Juan Felipe Herrera, son of migrant workers, immigrants in California. He joins us today from Fresno, California. He'll take over as Poet Laureate this fall. He has a long and celebrated life and body of work, lots of poetry, and not only poetry. He's written in many, many forms, much admired, much appreciated. He's been California Poet Laureate. Next up, Poet Laureate of the United States. Juan Felipe, a couple more greetings for you, then we want to hear more poetry. But Louis calling from Lunenburg, Massachusetts. Louis, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. And thank you so much, and I say congratulations. This is just so wonderful. The poem that you read had me mesmerized. After about 30 seconds, the way that the English and the Spanish interleave, I only speak a little Spanish, and I'm looking forward to learning more at age 70, but I do feel that our culture is already so influenced by everything that comes from our neighbors, you know, from Mexico, from South America, the music, the food, and I welcome your appointment. This is just so wonderful, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Louis. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Louis, very kind of you. And yes, we are mesmerized, too, by that intertwining. One more right here. Maria in Ashford, Connecticut. Maria, you're on the air with Juan Felipe.
Okay. Hello, Tom, and thank you, because you are the only one that bring me good news our community.
Happy to do it, Maria.
Okay?
You're welcome.
I always admire you for that. And second, my greetings to Señor Herrera. I am proud and happy for him.
Thank you, Maria. Muchas gracias.
It's a big, big achievement that you did. God bless
you
and keep your good work, okay?
Thank you. Gracias. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Maria. It's wonderful to hear from you. Juan Felipe Herrera, please tell us your family story. People will want to understand it. Your origin story, the move from Mexico to the United States. When was that? The work your parents did? Where was that? What was that farm worker life? What do you remember of it? Give us your early story, if you would.
Well, you know, I'm going to give it a go. My father, Felipe, he was born in 1882. And he came up from Chihuahua at the age of 14, small village in Chihuahua, northern state of Mexico. And he hopped on a train at 14. And that train took him all the way to Denver, Colorado, And he got off and he began his life as a cowboy, ranch hand, a hard worker, a laborer. And that's how my father began. And, of course, he came back. He kind of returned and he came back again. And he started building a life in Nuevo Mexico, New Mexico, and Las Cruces and Mesquite and Mesquite. And my mother came from DF, from Mexico City, around 1918, after the Mexican Revolution. My father before the Mexican Revolution. And she came all the way up to with my grandmother Juanita and my aunt Lela to Juarez, Chihuahua, and then crossed over after my uncles joined the army at Fort Bliss and in the same years. So then she began her life in the United States in El Paso, Texas, around the same time, around 1919. And those were my parents who began their lives in the United States very directly, you know, very difficult challenges. And
they must have had you late, if I may, because your dad was born in 1882, so he must have been of some years when you were born.
Yes, I'm the last one. I'm the last one. Yes, yes, you're right.
Okay.
I was born when my father was 66. And that's when I was born. Uh-huh. And so that's why I'm the very last one. And what happened is my parents were still farm workers and laborers, and up until my father was in his mid-70s. So that's the that's my early experience out in the fields with them. And see, my father worked the tractor, and my mother, slice, I think, apricots so they could be dried, you know, dried apricot produce. And that was those were my beginnings. And then, of course, a few years later, there I was in Mrs. Sampson's class in Logan Heights, San Diego.
Before you got there, describe for us, where did you live? How did you live? Your family, when it was the farm worker life?
Well, you know, it's, I mentioned this in Calling the Doves, a children's book. I love to do children's books. It was, you know, my father had this army truck. He bought an army truck at Fort Bliss, with kind of interesting connections. And he found an old beat-up car buried in a hill, and he got it out of there, and he used that as a kind of a chassis to build a one-room house on top of it, and then pulled it with that army truck, and we went from town to town and ranch to ranch when I was a child. And it was living outside in the open in tents in the little trailer, and working for the ranchers and then for families in Lake Wolfer, actually close to Escondido. That was one of our last stops until we settled down in Escondido and in Ramona up in the mountain. And then we came on down that hill. Ramona's kind of a high mountain, to San Diego, California, and finally left the farm worker landscapes and beautiful skies and difficult labor, too, behind.
Juan, Felipe Herrera has written about the empowering aspect of writing poetry. It's written, the mere act of writing can be a way of speaking, an act of liberation, teaching, learning, sharing, crossing over from silence into being. From silence into being, was that what poetry did for you?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. From silence into being. You know, the more we speak up, and the more we express our voices, the more we honor our voices and each other's voices, the more we become. The more we become human beings, and the more we kind of begin to drop away those things that we thought could never dissolve, those things that separate us.
Cynthia in Beaufort, South Carolina, thank you for calling, Cynthia. You're on with Juan Felipe Herrera.
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call, and congratulations, Juan. You have inspired me tremendously. I heard your first poem, and I'm lying here and thinking, this is just wonderful. In South Carolina, you know, we're having some very national problems, And unity yes. is what we're fighting for. And your poem belongs here with us in Charleston right now. You also say poetry brings us into our own being. I have a neurological disorder, and I had for 30 days to write a poem, and it tremendously relieved me of many of my emotional problems. And I suggest that, as Poet Laureate, you reach out to some of our soldiers who are coming back to the United States and help them relieve themselves and be united and feel their own being by writing poetry. It's beautiful, it's lyrical, and you're wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great idea. Thank you so much. I've been waiting to hear that, because I like to listen to people's point of view and include their point of view. And this is an amazing, beautiful suggestion that you just made. Thank you so much.
Cynthia, thank you for that. Juan Felipe, Charleston and the whole country have been struggling. Indeed, Cynthia's right. It's been a rough patch here. We have a poem from your upcoming collection, Notes on the Assemblage. It's coming out in September, but we've got one here already it's a little longer, but I wish you'd read it. It speaks to, I mean, Michael Brown is in here and Eric Garner is in here. It speaks to some of the tension in the air right now. Could you introduce Almost Living, Almost Dying for us, For All the Dead? It's subtitled here, and give us a read.
Well, you know, this is a complex poem, and thank you so much. Yes, this is a poem where I make an attempt in a poem by bringing together voices that have kind of been hard to bring together, including people that we seem to be in the media or in general, or maybe in some aspects, in some places, in some media, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We seem to put these voices apart, you know, the police, the community. There seems to be an amazing or incredible, terrible divide. And in this case, I take on the voice of someone in the streets. It's called Almost Living, Almost Dying. And here are my streets with ragged beats. And the beats are to beat, to live, so the graves push out with hands that cannot touch the makers of light, and the sun flames down through the roofs and the roots that slide to one side, and the whistling fires of the cops and the cops in the shops do what they gotta do, and your body's on the fence and your ID's in the air, and the shots get fired and the gas in the face, and the tanks on your blood and the innocence all around, and the spilling and the grilling and the grinning in the game of race no one wanted. And the same every day, so you fire and you eat the smoke through your long bones and your short mace and the day. This last sweet swisher day that turns to love, and no one knows how it came, or what it is, or what it says, or what it was, or what for, or from what gate. Is it open? Is it locked? Can you pull it back to your life? Filled with bitter juice and demon angel eyes, even though you pray and pray. Mama says you gotta sing. She says you got wings, but from what skies, from where could they rise? What are the things, the no things called love? How can its power be fixed or grasped so the beats keep on blowing, keep on flying, and the moon tracks your bed where you are alone or maybe dead, and the truth carves you, and calls you back still alive. Cry, cry the candles by the last four trees still soaked in Michael Brown red, and Officer Lou red, and Officer Ramos red, and Eric Garner, whose last words were not words. They were just breath, asking for breath. They were just burning like me, like we are all still burning. Can you hear me? Can you feel me? Swaggin' tall and driving low and talking fine and hollering for my corner crime and frying against the wall. Almost living, almost dying, almost living, almost dying.
Juan Felipe Herrera, from his forthcoming Notes on the Assemblage. That catches a lot. Maybe it says it all. But since Cynthia's called from South Carolina, we have a lot of listeners there and across the country. And now you have a national position. Speak for a moment to the people of Charleston and the people watching Charleston as our soon-to-be poet laureate of the United States. What do we need to be thinking, seeing? What do you think and see as you watch the events of this last week there?
Let us come together. Let us listen to each other's voices. Let us lay down our guard, our pain, our defenses, as much as we can. It is difficult. I support you. I call on everyone to embrace you. I call on all words of hate to dissolve, all words of revenge to dissolve. This is a moment to listen to your calls, to your songs, to your heart, to lift you up. That's what I'm here for. That's what I want all of us to be here for you.
David, in San Francisco, California. Thank you very much for calling, David. You're on the air with Juan Felipe Herrera, next Poet Laureate of the United States.
Yo, Tom. Yo, Juan Felipe. You know, we connected first, I think, I'm here in the Mission, the Mission District of San Francisco, the barrio here. And we connected at a reading you did, I think, at Modern Times Bookstore quite some years ago. But what I always think, when I think of you, Juan Felipe, is that you in Fresno, with two other poets, in fact, one that became a poet laureate before you. I'm talking about Phil Levine, but also, of course, Gary Soto. And the three of you together really exist together, dance in my mind together. And then, as I began to understand and think of the three of you there, Phil Levine, Gary Soto, Juan Felipe Herrera, and what, I want to say how much that means to me to think of the connections between you two on that faculty, Fresno State. Am I right?
Well, thank you, Dave. Those are great guys. You know, Phil was a great friend of mine, a good mentor, a great colleague, and just a beautiful human being, and his poetry was stellar and diamond-like, you know, and human. And Gary, you know, he's an amazing pioneer for all of us, a great writer for poets and children and communities and beautiful writers. I love both of them, yes, they're good people.
David, it's so good to hear from you from San Francisco. Take us back to your San Francisco, your Mission District years, City Lights Bookstore. Allen Ginsberg, an inspiration to you when you first were growing your poetry bug there.
That's true. You know, early Mission District days, my uncle and my mother and my aunts, they spent time in San Francisco in the 40s. And my uncle, Roberto Quintana, all the way until he passed away in 1978. And my mother worked at St. Francis Hotel, and she called herself a salad girl because she worked in the grills and kitchens and in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And I was up there in my elementary years as well. As I was in San Diego. I went to Marshall Elementary, Patrick Henry Elementary, and 16th and Mission when I was living in there. And it was a great time for me. You know, I helped my uncle deliver tortillas in the barrio there in the Mission District. He was a tortilla maker. I think he had the first tortilla machine in the Bay Area.
Wow.
And he was a great artist, you know. He had a large family, my cousins and my aunt Alvina. And he was a radio DJ. He introduced a lot of Spanish radio life into the Bay Area. He was also a great groundbreaker in El Paso, Texas, in Juarez, at the XJ power station of the 30s as a actor and poet as well. So those days were filled with that magic for me, and I was part of the Mission Branch Boys Club boxing team for around 15 seconds until that's as far as I got.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are delighted to be talking this hour with the newly named Poet Laureate of the United States, the first Latino Poet Laureate, Juan Felipe Herrera. He joins us from Fresno, California, the son of Mexican immigrant farm workers there, spent a lot of time on those farms himself, now been writing poetry and much more for a long time, has been California's Poet Laureate, published lots and lots of poetry. Senegal Taxi, his latest, Far From California, talking about Darfur, Half of the World in Light, prize winner, 187 Reasons Mexicanos Can't Cross the Border. You get the idea, and much more. You can find a selection of his poems at our website, onpointradio.org. Let's go to Jim in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Jim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me. I wanted to say that I heard in the last poem, I heard the beats. I got a feeling for that kind of poetry, and
the Beat Generation, Ginsberg's time, and more.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing I liked was he was so much better at being concise than Ginsberg was.
That's wonderful. You see him and raise him one there. Does it still speak to you, Jim, that beat sound?
Oh, it speaks to me. And then, you know, some people even said Kerouac wasn't that good, but I liked him.
Jim, I heard it too, right alongside you there in Almost Live and Almost Die, and Eat the Smoke Through Your Long Bones and the Short Mace, with Bitter Juice and Demon Angel Eyes and Cry, Cry the Candles by the Last Four Trees Still Soaked in Blood. Yes, it's easy to get to the beats. It's easy to get there through Juan Felipe Herrera. Do you channel them deliberately still, Juan? This is your not even published yet poem.
That's true. It's not even published. Well, you know, it's good to get into the channels. That's a good thing. We all have those channels, you know, the way we talk at home, the way we talk in public, and you know, we have different you know, registers and sing different kind of songs while we speak. I like all that. That's my life, you know, listening to everything, and then kind of getting into it. And we are part of it, you know. It's like, yes, it's really not out there.
No, it's rich American history. It's very rich California history, yes, and people listening well beyond. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Sheila's calling. Sheila, you're on with our next Poet Laureate.
Oh, hi, Tom. How are you doing
very,
today?
Very well. Thank you, Sheila.
Great. I can tell to Juan Felipe, or Senor Juan Felipe, that I totally understand where he comes from, saying that he had a feeling of his tongue being like stone, because I am a Mexican immigrant coming from Mexico at 16 years old. It was muy difícil trying to being part of this community and being part of the complete circle. But I like to say that I'm very proud. Estoy muy orgullosa de usted por darle una voz a la comunidad hispana y por expresarse en sus poemas all these feelings that you had, expressing all these frustrations probably as a child, trying to be part of this new world. Sometimes, you know, when we go to a new place, we feel like Columbus, you know, coming to a place where we might not belong, but somehow we make it. And it is great that through your poems you have shared with us how you have grown and how much you have show that the Hispanic community, it's good not just in one way, but in many. We are rich. Our culture is just rich in treasure. So, muchísimas gracias, and I congratulate you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Muchas gracias también. Muchas gracias.
Sheila, thank you so much. It might have been muy difícil, but I think you've come over pretty well there, and expressing your pride and gratitude for Juan Felipe giving the Hispanic community voice. Let's speak right to that, if we may. You've got a poem coming out in Notes on the Assemblage, your next collection. It's called Half Mexican. It might speak to Sheila and many, many others. Could you introduce and read for us?
Oh, sure thing. You know, this poem is, and I want to thank Sheila. Muchas gracias, Sheila. She's right about the notion of darle una voz, to give each other our voice, in a sense. That's what we can all do for each other, even though it's up to us. Half Mexican, you know, it's a whole thing of, you know, Mexican-American or African-American, you know, the hyphens that we all live with in one way or another, the past versus the present, and that dash in between. And this is, I tackle it and this piece as best as I can, but it's a whole new way for me to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Ought to be a half Mexican. Let me put it this way. I am Mexican plus Mexican. Then there's a question of the half. To say Mexican without the half, well, it means another thing. One could say only Mexican. Then think of pyramids, obsidian, flaw, flame, etchings, goddesses with flayed visages, claw feet, and skulls as belts. These are not Mexican. They are existences. That is to say, slavery, sinew, hearts shredded, sacrifices for the continuum, quarks and galaxies, the cosmic milk that flows into trees, then darkness. What is the other? Yes, it is Mexican too, yet it is formless. It is speckled with particles. European pieces? To say colony or power is incorrect. Better to think of Kant in his tiny room, shuffling in his black socks, seeking out the notion of time. Or Einstein reworking the erroneous equation concerning the way light bends. All this has to do with the half thing. When you're a half being, time, light, how they stalk you, and how you beseech them. All this becomes your lifelong project. That is, you are Mexican. One half Mexican, the other half Mexican, then the half against itself.
Juan Felipe Herrera reading from his soon-to-be-published poem, Half Mexican. And you can hear, we can all hear you working it through there. How does American come into that formula? It's a word that doesn't appear here.
Well, it all is American. Mm-hmm. You know, how we all have to deal with our histories in this place we call America, or the United States, or North America, or any country in the world. How we have to deal with what has happened generations past and what is happening in our present. You know, we are many groups in a society, and some of us come together more easily than others, and then we are all changing as time goes on and as things happen. So we are all contending with having a half. What we were, what our parents were, what three generations were before us, and where we are now, and what's happening to us as we face our present. So we're dealing with changes and fractures and differences and beautiful and difficult attempts at coming together. So that's how it affects us, and particularly in the United States. You're right, yes, America, the Americas, particularly in our experience.
There's the foreword to your collection, Half of the World in Light, big prize winner, was written by Francisco Lamilly.
Yes.
And he says there's a hopefulness about your poetry. He says, much like John Lennon's song Imagine, Herrera's poetry conjures up possibilities and potential in a fair new world in order to imagine beyond the box. He says this. He says that you produce via poetry a vision of a reachable utopia in order to intimate a new social order, as long as the Amerindian indigenous values are honored and cultivated. Does he have that right? And if he does, what does that mean? What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, Francisco Lomelí is a great professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara, great friend of mine for many years. Mm-hmm. The Amerindian experience and vision, you know, that's how I started, and many of us started in California back in the late 60s, early 70s as Chicano poets, with a notion of bringing together our indigenous and reclaiming our indigenous identities. And that was quite a task. And I think that's what Francisco may be talking about, our kind of roots identities throughout the continent, Amerindia, the indigenous nations of this continent, and actually and throughout the world, you know, reclaiming our not just our immediate life or orb or neighborhood, which is beautiful, but actually reaching as deep and as far and as wide as we can. In a way, you could say that's our Amerindian experience. That's how I would put it.
Does that have something to offer everyone in this country, even straight-up old-style gringos?
All of us, you know. Once again, the more we break through, you know, we are human beings, and we have this thing called consciousness that is self-aware and aware of others in a very unique way, that we can actually communicate very easily. So if we can communicate very easily, then we can actually communicate with more and more and more and more peoples and more histories and herstories. And the more we do that, the more we become human beings. So that's how I would work with that notion of Amerindian identity that Francisco Lomelí talks about.
Let's go to Ohio. Andrea is calling from Stowe, Ohio. Andrea, you're on the air with Juan Felipe Herrera.
Hi, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Juan, for having me so much.
Thank you.
I'm just curious to know what you would advise or just suggest to all those people out there who are juggling with two cultures. My son was actually born in Spain, and I was reminded a lot of him hearing your story. He started his first day of third grade class and came out and was just only Spanish coming out of his mouth when I picked him up from school. And I'm actually a Spanish teacher, and I've seen lots of students from actually you wouldn't know it, but here in small town Ohio, we have so many different diversity. I mean, students from so many different backgrounds, a lot of diversity. And I just wondered what you could say to them to be proud of their what they can do to be proud of their culture and to be like you said, like half and half, you know. Maybe they speak a different language at home, and then at school it's all in English, and just how they can kind of juggle those two personalities and those two cultures that are so important to them.
Juan?
Oh, you know, that's a great question, and it's a very big question today in all our communities, like you say. And thank you for that amazing question. It's real, you know. I think, and the key word was juggle. It's good to juggle with our lives and our languages. If we stop, you know, we say, I'm going to hide it. I'm going to hide. That's not moving it. That's not juggling it. We need to ride it. We need to find ways of becoming more involved. You know, I definitely understand going to school and it's all only English, and at home it's only Spanish or mostly Spanish or in our neighborhoods. But schools are open for our participation. Teachers are open for our participation. Principals are open to our participation. So all we have to do is take a step forward and say, you know, I would like to present a poem in Spanish or a bilingual poem in class today, or I'd like to present this and that, or be more engaged in the schools. So we can do that as a family. As individuals, we need to support each other, you know. We need to support our children and find ways of supporting what they're going through. So that is, hey, let's read this book. It's a bilingual book, and let's read it out together. Or let's read in Spanish today. Or what songs are you listening to that are in Spanish? So we have to find ways together. Alone is hard. To do it alone is hard. And to give each other a lot of encouragement and cariño, as we would say in Spanish, right? As we would say, a lot of tenderness. So tenderness is key. And so I support your children. I support all children. I support all families, all teachers, all those that are dealing with this thing about language differences and language conflicts at times, you know, with being able to speak our home language in public. So we need to support it. I support you, and I want you to know that I'm going to invite you to present your poetry your home language poetry, whether it's in Spanish or Chinese or Japanese or Vietnamese or Cambodian or French or Italian. And I'm going to present that project when I get inaugurated in September, because I'm going to invite you to do this, to write in your home language and translate it into English. Both. But let's do it all together.
Let's do it all together. Andrea, thank you for calling from Ohio. Juan Felipe, we're almost out of time. How wonderful to have you. People are asking, you know, does poetry still matter? We don't really have time to address it fully. I do want to say you have a poem coming in your next collection called Let Me Tell You What a Poem Brings. And it says it has a whole wonderful sort of stream of images, and it ends with that. They take us out in the middle of much, and it says in the end, the mist that becomes central to your existence. I want to tell our listeners you can read that poem from Juan Felipe Herrera at our website, onpointradio.org. Let me tell you what a poem brings. We don't even have time to do it all today, but we have you coming as Poet Laureate for the United States. You'll have time to tell us then, Juan Felipe. When do you take over?
I take over on the 15th of September, yes.
We look forward to it. We congratulate you. We're grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks, everyone.
Juan Felipe Herrera from Fresno, California, the first Latino Poet Laureate of the United States, newly named. He'll be there from September. Read his poem, Let Me Tell You What a Poem Brings, at our website, onpointradio.org. And thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Juan Felipe Herrera. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.